On February 21st, just days before Russian President Vladimir Putin began his attack on Ukraine, Putin gave a speech warning NATO against interfering.
Whoever would try to stop us and further create threats to our country, to our people, should know that Russia's response will be immediate and lead you to such consequences that you have never faced in your history. We are ready for any outcome.
Putin was talking about nuclear weapons. 3 days later, he invaded Ukraine, and then, on February 27th, he made his threat explicit.
Top officials of leading NATO countries are making aggressive statements about our country. Therefore, I'm ordering the Minister of Defense and the Chief of the General Staff to put the strategic nuclear forces on special alert.
Special alert is the Russian military's highest level of alert. So Putin's statement is serious. But it should also be noted that Russia, France, the United Kingdom, and of course the United States maintain almost 2,000 nuclear warheads on various states of high alert. They could all be launched on short notice, according to estimates from the Nuclear Information Project at the Federation of American Scientists. Still, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky called Putin's threat a, quote, bluff. In an interview with the German newspaper Die Zeit, Zelensky said, quote, "It's one thing to be a murderer. It's another to commit suicide." And White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said on ABC News,
"This is really a pattern that we've seen from President Putin through the course of this conflict, which is manufacturing threats that don't exist in order to justify further aggression. And the global community and the American people should look at it through that prism."
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. On the one hand, it is reasonable for political leaders to ask the world to keep a level head. But on the other hand, I question Psaki's insistence on manufactured threats that don't exist. Because nuclear weapons do exist. The threat has existed since the United States bombed Hiroshima and Nagasaki in 1945. So Putin posturing, that's the prism that Jen Psaki says we should use now. But of course, prisms refract. They actually show us more than the regular eye can see. They break up one bright beam and reveal many component parts. So when someone like Pavel Podvig looks through that prism, what does he see?
I see paths that would actually trap Russia or the United States and its allies into situations in which they would feel that nuclear weapons could be used or should be used, or they would feel that's the only way out of this. Normally, I would trust the people to make reasonable decisions. But then again, I mean, looking back, 2 weeks now, I was definitely convinced that an invasion of Ukraine makes absolutely no sense. I still believe that that's the case. But nevertheless, it happened, and it sort of forced quite a few people to kind of recalibrate their assumptions of what is reasonable and rational and what is not.
Podvig is a senior researcher in the Weapons of Mass Destruction program at the United Nations Institute for Disarmament Research. And he offers what I think is a more powerful prism through which to view this moment. Things that make no sense but still happen. So should we recalibrate our assumptions of what's irrational and what is not? Well, Podvig says strategic nuclear missiles could be launched in minutes, but he says Russia's non-strategic weapons, which he says are more likely to be deployed in an initial attack, take much longer to prepare.
You would need to take weapons out of storage, bring them to a certain location, install them on missiles, or load missiles on their launchers, and only after that the actual attack would be possible. And again, we're talking about a series of steps and fairly large number of people involved, and that would probably involve a certain degree of planning as well.
Even if there are a large number of people involved, does Putin have the singular authority to order a launch?
There is, of course, quite a bit of uncertainty about how exactly the system is set up. So the honest answer is we don't really know whether the president can launch a nuclear attack on his own. It appears that in some circumstances that might be possible, and at the same time, it would probably take a number of steps and it would involve a number of people in the decision. So it would be a result of a certain deliberation in the top leadership.
Nevertheless, Pavel Podvig says, given Putin's authoritarian control in Russia, would anyone stand in his way?
The president is the commander-in-chief, and if necessary, he could probably force that decision through the chain of command.
So today, we want to recalibrate those assumptions, get a level-headed but realistic look at what could happen, intentionally or unintentionally, that might lead to the launch of a nuclear weapon. And we also definitely want to talk about what the world could do now to be sure that never happens. So we'll begin today with Malfrid Braut Hegghammer. She joins us from Oslo, Norway. She's the director of the Oslo Nuclear Program at the University of Oslo. Malfrid, welcome to On Point.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I wonder if you could start with what might be a clear indication about how seriously Norway is taking this threat. I understand you got a notice from your children's school pertaining to the increased nuclear threat. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, I think this is a way in which a lot of people in my country and in my neighborhood are really beginning to feel the seriousness of the situation and how this is close to home in many ways. So we received requests from schools and kindergarten to accept that our children could take iodine tablets in the event of an incident. And so I think that really hit home in a lot of ways.
Mm. So schools telling parents that in Norway that iodine pills may be given to children. Also, I understand that there are reports of more people in Norway building bomb shelters, etc.
People are certainly starting to ask questions where the nearest shelter is. There is increased focus and attention to these kinds of facilities that were very familiar during the Cold War, but honestly, for the past couple of decades, people haven't really thought much about. And so, you know, on the subway, I hear people talking about nuclear war, which really is not an everyday conversation in Oslo. Mm. So it is certainly something that is really beginning to concern a lot of people. And for good reason, we are, after all, neighbors with the largest nuclear weapons arsenal in the world. Mm-hmm. And so this is part of our neighborhood, even if we haven't thought much about it in a long time.
So do you think the concern is warranted? Because you heard me quote what even President Volodymyr Zelensky has said, what Jen Psaki from the White House was saying about Putin bluffing and manufacturing threats that don't exist.
I think that it is very important that we're not panicking and that we're not intimidated in a way that perhaps President Putin is hoping that we might be. At the same time, these are real weapons. They're not abstract constructs. There are many of them. And in any scenario where, you know, there is a conventional war in Europe and a nuclear weapon state's president is speaking of nuclear weapons in this way, certainly I am concerned. I think we all should be.
Mm. So what we'd like to accomplish this hour is to get a much deeper understanding beyond headlines about what is essentially the decision tree or the possible scenarios that could lead to the unthinkable. So can you lay out what you do see as a possible scenario that might lead to the intentional or unintentional launch of a nuclear weapon?
Well, I think that this kind of exercise is something that a lot of states have done, especially after 2014 and the annexation of Crimea. So these are thought exercises that many have engaged in. Some of them involve a potential demonstration of a nuclear weapon near Norway. So these are scenarios and prospects that also sort of feel quite close to home. As you pointed to, there are two different kinds of pathways, one intended escalation, the other unintended. To start with the unintended one, that could be a situation where in a conflict, the situation could rapidly develop to a point where one party decides to use nuclear weapons, but that this occurs as the result of perhaps confusion, misinterpretation, rather than as a strategic decision intended to achieve a certain effect. The other scenario would be an intended escalation. And this is a kind of scenario that observers of nuclear weapons and of Russian nuclear doctrine that they have talked about and debated for a long time. Many years ago, there were discussions within Russian nuclear doctrine about the possibility of using a nuclear weapon fairly early on in a conflict to stop the situation from escalating further. But this was a very different kind of scenario than what we have in the Ukraine. Mm. These were deliberations relating to a conventional war on Russia. So I think it's important that we separate the situation today from those kinds of scenarios.
Well, so that's really important. And Malfred Braut Hegghammer, I have more questions to ask you when we come back. We just have to take a quick 1 minute break. And then when we return, we're going to talk a little bit about what Norway and Sweden and some neighboring countries, even changes that they're making right now to avoid the unthinkable. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Malfred Braut Hegghammer joins us today. She's director of the Oslo Nuclear Project at the University of Oslo. And Malfred, I'd love to get a little bit more information from you on what nations are trying to do right now as we speak to avoid the unintended launch of a nuclear weapon. And we can learn from history here. Can you tell us about what happened in Norway in 1995 regarding a rocket test?
Absolutely. So there is a facility in northern Norway in a place called Andøya, beautiful place, where there are scientific rockets launched regularly. In 1995, we had one of those launches, and it was notified to the Russian ministries and so on. Apparently, this was lost in the system, and when the rocket went up, there were preparations on the Russian side, similar to those that we've seen today, but not quite that far up the chain. So President Yeltsin was talking about the nuclear suitcase in a press conference, and of course there was a lot of concern about this and discussions about what it meant and whether it took us close to a nuclear response.
But the key thing is that Norway had informed Russia of this rocket test, but somehow the information didn't get to Yeltsin or the highest levels of the Russian military, which led to this escalation of tensions. Okay. But so now, though, what are Norway and, for example, Sweden doing to avoid even that potential escalation of tension?
So in Sweden, they have halted these kinds of tests out of concern that this could lead to a problematic kind of situation. In Norway, these activities are ongoing, but with all the usual notification mm-hmm. protocols, etc. And I think one important point to make about the 1995 incident was that, yes, the notification was sent, it was received, it was lost in the system, but that it seems the Russians noticed this fairly early on, and there are a lot of questions still about why this became such a difficult situation, given that the notification was sent and received.
Understood. Okay, so, but as you said, Sweden recently called off a routine test to just completely avoid any miscommunications whatsoever. That's notable. Mm. One more question for you, Malfred, if I may. What do you think is the most important thing, or one of the most important things, that the international community could do or must do right now in order to stave off the possibility of a nuclear launch?
To continue efforts to calm the situation down, be very clear about what is done, what isn't done, to keep open crisis communication channels to prevent any kind of misunderstanding from happening. Certainly that is something that Norway is very concerned about and works with developing on an everyday basis. And I think that's exactly what we need right now.
Well, Malfred Braut Hegghammer in Oslo is director of the Oslo Nuclear Project at the University of Oslo. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's turn now to Cambridge, Massachusetts. Matthew Bunn joins us. He's professor of the practice of energy, national security and foreign policy at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. Professor Bunn, welcome to you.
Pleasure to be here.
So you heard what Malfred had to say, but I'd actually also like to take a step back before we move forward and get a common understanding of what the sort of nuclear arsenal is, particularly of the United States and Russia, since together those two nations have 90% of the nuclear weapons on planet Earth. So can you just basically, just quickly describe, how would you describe what our arsenals are like?
Well, both the United States and Russia have arsenals that contain thousands of nuclear weapons, most of which are much larger than the nuclear weapons that obliterated the Japanese cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki at the end of World War II. These weapons are designed to be able to survive a nuclear first strike by the other side and deliver a crushing retaliation. They include land-based intercontinental ballistic missiles, missiles on submarines that are very difficult to find in the ocean and therefore quite survivable, and weapons on bombers that could be delivered from planes. So that includes both gravity bombs and cruise missiles that could be launched from the air. Both countries also have arsenals of non-strategic nuclear weapons, tactical nuclear weapons that are for use in a more battlefield context. Russia has maintained a much larger stockpile of those than the United States has. The United States has only a few hundred gravity bombs left of what used to be many thousands of tactical nuclear weapons. Russia still has a couple of thousand of these battlefield nuclear weapons.
Mm. Now, I mentioned earlier in the show that according to the Federation of American Scientists, they estimate that some 2,000 of these weapons could be launched within short notice. How short is short notice here, Matthew?
Well, unfortunately, as you mentioned, a large fraction of these weapons remain on combat alert. They could be launched within minutes of an order to do so. Particularly the land-based intercontinental ballistic missiles are quite vulnerable to attack by the other side, and so are ready, should the president decide to do so, to launch in the event of a credible, confirmed warning of an attack. I believe that's a mistake, and that decisions that could lead to the deaths of millions of human beings should not be made in a matter of minutes while the warning systems are saying an attack could be coming. There have been false alarms before, as you were discussing in one case with Malfred. We cannot guarantee, although we've made many improvements, that there will never be a false alarm in the future. So I think launch on warning is a dangerous policy and should be abandoned.
Launch on warning. Okay. So what about particularly regarding Russia right now? You heard Pavel Podvig earlier say that it's not entirely clear what the decision chain is to authorize a nuclear strike there. Do you know more?
Pavel knows as much as anyone outside the Russian command system, I believe. He's a remarkable expert on Russian nuclear forces. Russia has been quite secretive as to what the specifics are. But as Pavel was saying, if Vladimir Putin decided that it was essential to his war aims to, for example, carry out a demonstration shot with a tactical nuclear weapon, I believe that would probably happen. There would have to be quite a number of other people involved in the chain, as Pavel mentioned, of events that would lead up to the use of such a weapon. But I think Vladimir Putin has very strong control over the security system in his country, for better or for worse, mostly for worse. I will say people shouldn't be too panicked. As of right now, there has been no movement of nuclear weapons out of central storage facilities that would be necessary, as Pavel said, to get them ready. And despite Putin's remarks, there has been no major change in the status of Russian nuclear forces. It appears, talking to Russian experts, that mostly that special combat duty, as it's sometimes translated, that Putin ordered involves adding more personnel at certain operating facilities and so on.
I see. Okay. But, you know, the other thing that Pavel Podvig said to us, which I keep coming back to over and over again, is that, you know, Putin's attack on Ukraine didn't make any sense, but it happened anyway. And that's really the framework that I'm trying to think through the nuclear threat
Indeed.
Here. It would not make any sense, but it could happen anyway. I mean, we're getting some comments here from folks who are saying, well, Putin knows he cannot afford to lose the war. If he's backed into a corner, the nuclear option would seem to be the only card he has left to avoid humiliation, another listener is writing. It wouldn't be surprising that they would resort to using a nuclear weapon. Your thoughts on that, Matthew Bunn?
Meghna, I think, unfortunately, Putin has a large number of cards still in his hand. The Russians have made either no use or very limited use so far of what are called thermobaric weapons or fuel-air explosives that they have used in Syria and in Chechnya to absolutely level civilian areas. There are a wide variety of things, if they just want to cause damage and suffering, that they haven't done yet that they could do. Now, it is certainly possible that Putin would ultimately decide to try to use a nuclear weapon to shock the Ukrainians into surrender. I regard that as still unlikely. I wish I thought it was inconceivable.
The thing about nuclear weapons, and I'm going to be a tip of the hat to someone on Twitter who fortunately, I do not remember their Twitter handle, but they tweeted that if you're thinking about the decision trees regarding the use and response, for example, use and therefore what a response would be in the event of a nuclear strike, that there's a point in the decision tree that if a nuclear weapon was used, it produces like such a profound negative infinity in that decision tree that it breaks down all sense, right? So help me understand, Matthew, if, and we hope this does not happen, but if, say, Putin used a tactical nuclear weapon in Ukraine, the bigger question then almost is, what should NATO's response be? What should the world's response, the United States' response be? Because would it de facto lead to an automatic catastrophic escalation, Matthew?
No, it would not automatically, and I don't think it should. For better or for worse, NATO has made clear, and the United States has made clear, that they will not be sending troops, airplanes, tanks of their own to fight with Ukraine. And I think that would continue to be the case because of nuclear deterrence. The reality is Russia is attacking a country that is not protected by a nuclear ally. We would be, in response, if were we to use nuclear weapons, attacking a nuclear state with thousands of nuclear weapons, with the ability to cause the United States to cease to exist as a functioning society in half an hour, should it choose to do so. So I strongly believe that the appropriate response would not be the use of nuclear weapons in response. I think, though, that the entire world would join in condemning Russia's actions, and Russia would be extraordinarily isolated, both politically and economically. But I don't think there would be a substantial military response in that event. Now, the very different situation would be were Russia to launch attacks into NATO territory. Mm-hmm. That would raise a completely different situation because the NATO countries have all agreed that an attack on one is an attack on all. And as President Biden has said, he plans to defend every inch of NATO territory.
Well, I mean, just over the weekend, though, we're seeing reports of things this getting closer to Poland. Does that concern you?
Absolutely. I think there are significant dangers of things getting out of hand. Russia senior officials have said, have threatened, in essence, that they might attack some of the arms shipments to Ukraine. And you could easily imagine them choosing to carry out such an attack while the shipment was still on NATO territory. Even then, I think that NATO has carefully thought through what the response should be that would be proportionate to a Russian assault on NATO territory. The dangers would be high, but escalation is by no means automatic. It's something everyone is trying to avoid. Mm.
You know, just to go back briefly to what would happen if Putin used a tactical nuclear weapon in Ukraine. I mean, over the weekend, to be perfectly frank, total transparency, I was getting more and more alarmed about what could happen in that event. Because from a layperson's point of view, you know, there's really no meaningful difference between the use of a tactical nuclear weapon or something larger, because there's just the presumption that first strike then would automatically elicit a response in kind, at least. So then wouldn't we just be at nuclear war, I suppose? And are you saying that I should not feel so agitated about that?
I absolutely am saying you should not feel so agitated. There's an enormous difference between a nuclear weapon state like Russia using one or a small number of nuclear weapons in an aggressive war against a country like Ukraine and nuclear states duking it out with each other with nuclear weapons. Those are two very, very different situations.
Okay, we have to take a quick break here. But let me just ask you in the 20 seconds we have before the break, Matthew. But a tactical nuclear weapon? I mean, how many people would die even if the use of one tactical nuke?
Depends on what they targeted. You could easily imagine that an enormous number of people would die if it's targeted on a major city. But you could also easily imagine that they might carry out a demonstration shot somewhere where not very many people were.
Okay. Well, Matthew Bunn, stand by here for just a second. Matthew is a professor of the practice of energy, national security, and foreign policy at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. And this hour, we're trying to think through, really, what are the scenarios, again, that might lead to the launch of a nuclear weapon and what the world should do right now to assure that doesn't happen. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Just a quick note of something we're working on for later this week, because amidst all the trying to understand the catastrophe going on in Ukraine, there's also the fact that we are in the 2-year anniversary of the COVID-19 pandemic. So we're going to be taking a look at that later this week, and we want to hear from you. How are you reflecting on the past couple of years? How did the pandemic, everything about it, its health impact, its social impact, its economic impact, how did it change your life? We want to hear stories challenging and inspiring from you. So call us at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683. That's for a show we're working on later this week about the 2-year anniversary of the global COVID-19 pandemic. Today, we're talking about the threat of nuclear weapons, specifically after Vladimir Putin a couple of weeks ago put his nuclear forces on a special alert. Matthew Bunn joins us. He's professor of the practice of energy, national security, and foreign policy at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. And Matthew, if you could just listen along with me for a moment. We also spoke with someone at Princeton University's Science and Global Security Lab. And the possibility and then the outcome if nuclear weapons were used is something that this lab has been exploring for years. And in 2019, they created a simulation that simulated a possible escalating war between the United States and Russia, given what we know about the nuclear posture of both nations. Now, this simulation is called Plan A, and here's some audio from it. Okay, so based on the calculations from the Global Security Lab at Princeton, more than 90 million people could be killed or injured within the first few hours of a nuclear conflict. Sharon Weiner is a researcher at Princeton's Science and Global Security Lab, and she told us that the simulation applies today more than ever.
The concern is that Russia might be tempted to use a small nuclear weapon to make a point. And what our work shows is people then are tempted to use what they think is reciprocal, but then slightly bigger to make another point. And of course, if both sides play that game, you end up in a major nuclear war. So it's not clear that people can control escalation, even if they try.
Now, the lab has also been studying how world leaders make such high-pressure decisions about when and when not to launch a nuclear strike.
If you look at the literature about behavioral psychology, behavioral economics, foreign policy decision making, you find that people don't behave rationally. They use a variety of different irrational shortcuts or heuristics. People are much more prone to use these in times of crisis, like a nuclear crisis, and when things are really uncertain, like a nuclear crisis. Because part of the problem with a nuclear crisis, at least in the U.S., is the president would have likely 15 minutes or less to make a decision. And during that time frame, I mean, you could imagine all the things you would want to know, but you probably aren't going to know them.
And Sharon says, given what the world has seen thus far from Vladimir Putin, she believes some form of concern is warranted.
But there's a difference between saying, you know, that you should stay up all night biting your fingernails worrying about this and go dig a fallout shelter. I wouldn't say that. But to say it's not a possibility, I can't say that either.
Sharon Weiner, researcher at Princeton's Science and Global Security Lab. Well, I'd like to turn now to Dr. Ira Helfand. He's former president of the International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War. Two groups that he founded won Nobel Peace Prizes in 1985 and 2017, the International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War, as I just mentioned, and the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, or ICAN. Dr. Helfand, welcome.
Hi, Magna. Thanks so much for doing this program about nuclear war today.
So you heard Professor Bunn's reasoned explanation about why perhaps we should not be as concerned as I was expressing I was over the weekend. Do you share that sense of sort of perhaps realistic calm right now?
No, I don't at all, and I don't think it's realistic. I think your anxiety is the appropriate response to the current situation. We've spent the last 30 years in denial of the possibility of nuclear war since the Cold War ended, and it has not served us well. It has enabled us to get to the current moment, which, as Sharon just pointed out, is one which we could see total nuclear war. That's not a good situation, and it's not something we should be complacent about.
But you heard earlier that, again, I'm just going to quote President Zelensky again, saying that Putin is not suicidal. There is the presumption of some kind of recognizable rationality behind the decision-making or that the decision-making that Putin would go through before launching a nuclear weapon. Is the presumption of that rationality the right way to think about this?
I don't think so. As Sharon just pointed out in her comments, people are not necessarily rational in crisis situations. They make lots of irrational decisions. The decision to invade Ukraine appears to most of us to have been a completely irrational decision. And so I don't think we can presume that rationality will be the rule. You know, as Robert McNamara pointed out so presciently, it has not been wise leaders or sound doctrine or, for that matter, infallible technology that has prevented nuclear war thus far. What McNamara said was, quotes, "We lucked out." It was luck that prevented nuclear war. Mm. And I think that's essentially the situation we're in right now. We've been unaccountably lucky for the last 70 years. We cannot have our policy be a presumption that luck will continue indefinitely, because it won't. Mm. We need a real policy that recognizes that sooner or later these weapons are going to be used, and they need to be eliminated before that happens.
Matthew Bunn, would you like to respond?
Well, I absolutely agree that there are real nuclear dangers in the current situation and in the situation that we have been in for decades. People, I think, in the United States sort of forgot about nuclear weapons and the danger of nuclear war after the end of the Cold War. But now I'm concerned that we're racing to the opposite extreme and thinking that nuclear war is about to happen tomorrow. And I don't think that's the case. I think that as President Zelensky said, there's a big difference between being a murderer and being suicidal. And I think Putin is the former and not the latter. So I think the dangers that we face are mostly about things inadvertently getting out of control, as Ira said. We have been lucky in situations like the Cuban Missile Crisis in the past. I think in this situation, we need to make sure, as Malfred said, that the lines of communication remain open, that we avoid any conflict between Russia and NATO themselves, so that we're not talking about a nuclear-armed alliance versus a nuclear-armed state. That's where the real danger would grow tremendously.
Okay, so there's so much, actually, that I want to explore with both of you. First of all, Dr. Helfand, let me turn back to you here, because Professor Bunn a few minutes ago actually said something that I'd love to hear you on, that there, if, as awful as it would be, but if Putin used even a tactical nuclear weapon, then, and Professor Bunn, I hope I'm paraphrasing you here correctly, that, but then it's, we should not automatically presume that the United States or other nuclear armed countries within NATO would launch a strike in kind. That, in fact, if there's going to be a moment of rational decision making, it would come from NATO countries, from the United States, to decide not to launch a similar tactical nuke, thereby perhaps staving off an escalated war. What your thoughts on that?
Well, I think in the event that Putin does use a tactical nuclear weapon, the U.S. response absolutely should be that we will not respond to that in kind. In fact, I think the most useful thing that the United States could do at the moment is to declare that it will not use nuclear weapons in the current context and should challenge Russia to match that. Our organization, IPPNW, has launched a global petition asking both NATO and Russia to explicitly state that they will not use nuclear weapons in this current context. And I think that would be an enormously helpful step. But it does not eliminate the possibility of inadvertent escalation to nuclear war. Mm. You know, I think Putin probably is not suicidal, although he has done enormous damage to himself and his country by launching this war. And the people who started World War I were not suicidal either, but look where they ended up. People do not often understand the consequences of what they do. And when we're talking about nuclear war, those consequences are calamitous and irreversible.
So I can sometimes be a broken record, and I ask everyone for forgiveness on that. But it seems to me, and perhaps Dr. Helfand, this is what you've been trying to get at, that for 70 years or so, we've been banking on rationality, right? That we know how awful nuclear weapons are, and it's irrational to want to repeat that. But if anything, I think even the COVID pandemic has shown us how quickly rationality can disappear, how when people feel that they are under significant threat, they can behave in ways that even, you know, if they had been rational actors before, are seemingly irrational later. And so, Matthew Bunn, seriously, I mean, do you think that even to just presume that that's the kind of decision making that Putin's going through, because it requires truly rational thought, requires time, as you said, it requires high quality information. It requires trust. It requires communication. It requires all the things that it does not seem to me Vladimir Putin has around him at this moment.
I don't think it requires any of those things to avoid taking action that you know would lead to the end of your life and the incineration of much of your country. I think it is a very basic level of reasoning that is required. I think, as Ira mentioned, the real danger is that when forces are in conflict, things can get out of control. Decisions can be made that aren't expected to lead to nuclear use, but do end up leading to nuclear use. In the Cuban Missile Crisis, the U.S. Navy was dropping what it thought of as practice depth charges, just sort of hand grenades, on Soviet submarines to force them to the surface, having no idea that those submarines actually had nuclear weapons on board. And one of those submarines thought the war had started and almost ended up launching its nuclear weapons. So it's these moments when things in the field get out of control that I think are the biggest danger, exactly as Ira said with respect to the World War I analogy. It's not that Putin or anyone else is going to wake up one morning and say, boy, today would really be a terrific day to have an all-out nuclear war. That's not the way this is going to happen.
But he could wake up and say, I'm on the back foot. The troops are not.
And I might decide to use a tactical nuclear weapon in Ukraine. Absolutely. But then, as Ira also said, the appropriate answer from NATO and the United States is not using nuclear weapons.
Dr. Helfand, do
we
you
have no.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you have faith that that would be the response?
No, I don't. I would hope it would be the response, but we have no assurance whatsoever that would be the response. And what would happen, for example, if missiles that were launched to land 12 miles from the Polish border instead flew over that border and caused significant damage inside Poland? There are many ways that this current conflict can escalate to nuclear war. Mm-hmm. And the bottom line is we should not be in this position. Nuclear weapons should not be on the table so that they can be used deliberately or inadvertently.
Right. So
what we need to take away from this moment is the absolute necessity of eliminating nuclear weapons once and for all. The idea that they deter conflict has just been blown out of the water by this war. The nuclear arsenal of the Russian Federation has enabled Vladimir Putin to launch this war and to bring us all to this precipice. We're playing an extraordinarily dangerous game by continuing to base our security on the existence of these weapons. And we need to recognize once and for all that nuclear weapons do not make us safe. They are the greatest threat to our security, and they must be eliminated.
Matthew Bunn, Dr. Helfand said that one of the things that could be done right now, doesn't even have to wait, but right now, is if NATO and the United States said, no, we are not going to use even tactical nuclear weapons at all. What else do you think could and should be done right now, Matthew, to, again, stave off the possibility?
Well, I think the Biden administration actually has been taking a very sensible approach so far. They have been very consciously de-escalating on the nuclear topic whenever they have the opportunity. So when Putin said, you know, oh, I'm putting my strategic nuclear forces on special combat duty, the White House said, yeah, he's just rattling the nuclear saber. We're not going to make any changes in our nuclear forces. I think we need to be prepared for all of the awful humanitarian consequences that could occur if nuclear weapons were used. We need to think through what will our responses be? What can we convince how can we convince other countries to respond in politically, economically, etc. But I think we need to be very firm, and I would totally support Ira's idea of a statement on our side and pressuring them for a statement on their side that neither side would use nuclear weapons in the current conflict.
So we have 30 seconds left. And Dr. Helfand, and I know Matthew Bunn shares this concern as well, there's a long-term implication here that, you know, efforts towards denuclearization, non-proliferation, et cetera, disarmament, have they been significantly derailed?
I think it's very hard to know at this point. The obvious first answer is yes, they have been. This is a very difficult situation. But I think we should remember that after the Cuban Missile Crisis, both Kennedy and Khrushchev recoiled in horror from how close they had brought the world to disaster. And within 7 months, they negotiated the Test Ban Treaty. So perhaps the outcome of this horrible conflict will be a renewed understanding of the urgent need to eliminate nuclear weapons, and perhaps some short-term progress towards that goal is possible.
I'm afraid we'll have to leave it there. With that, Dr. Ira Helfand, former president of the International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War and Nobel Peace Prize winner as well, thank you. And Matthew Bunn, professor at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government, thank you as well. This is On Point.